This is America on the Road on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Jack Nierak.
This is America on the Road, named best radio show by the International Automotive Media Conference, and now in its 30th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. And thanks for joining us for a special edition. It's the North American Car of the Year edition of America on the Road. Fellow North American Car of the Year juror Matt DiLorenzo and I are in Los Angeles, different parts of Los Angeles, as it turns out, for the announcement of the 9 finalists, and of course some other stuff too. In the show, we'll tell you all about all 9, along with our commentary on it. Matt, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great to be here, Jack.
Always great to have Matt with us. This is Los Angeles Show Week, as I mentioned, and the LA Show remains one of the most important shows on the auto industry calendar. And the industry is full of news this week anyway, isn't it, Matt? One of the most popular cars in America is going all hybrid all the time. Matt has the lowdown on that. We'll tell you what it is and why that's important. General Motors is trying to pick up the pieces after the recent issues it has had with its Cruise self-driving car effort. And we'll have details on that, some of them ugly. And a new study shows that electric cars are driven much less than conventional cars. Maybe we can figure out why that is, right? Matt is a driver of an electric car. We'll dissect that coming up. And we'll also have some new information on how the transition to 100% electric cars is going. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com, YourTestDriver.com, EMLancey.com, the publisher of my latest book, Dance in the Dark, and, of course, Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at drivingtoday.com/auto insurance. That's drivingtoday.com/auto-insurance. Don't spell out hyphen, just put a hyphen in there. I'm Jack Nierad. With me is the smiling face of Matt DiLorenzo. He smiles on the radio, and that's a good thing to do. As you longtime listeners know, Matt and I are longtime colleagues and friends. And Matt is the author of the recent book, How to Buy an Affordable Electric Car, A Tightwad's Guide to EV Ownership. Matt, it's so great to have you on the show. We love to have you when you guest host. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here, Jack. A lot to talk about this week.
There is a lot to talk about. Why don't we plug your website before we get into that, though? I mean, you have a website that's associated with your book. Tell us about that.
Right. It's called tightwadgarage.com, and you can order my book there, and you get updates on the latest news of what's going on in the industry. I'll be covering the LA show, as you will, later this week.
Yeah, absolutely true. Show going on now. Typically, we review a couple of vehicles on this show, but in this special edition, we have 9 vehicles to talk about, and we'll probably talk about more because I think one of the most interesting things about the finalist announcement for North American Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year are the vehicles that didn't make the finals.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that, but let's dive into the news. And the vehicle that is important vehicle that's going all hybrid all the time is the Toyota Camry. Matt, you were there to see the unveiling. Tell us about that.
It's really a beautiful car. I think they finally are hitting their stride when it comes to design. The Prius, you know, was a big change from the previous model. Similar change. I think the design is less polarizing. It's very beautiful. And the car goes all hybrid next year. It'll be introduced as a 2025 model. And I believe that's a big year for the auto industry because CAFE takes another big jump. The corporate average fuel economy figures take a big jump. So no more gas-only versions. They'll all be hybrids. You'll be able to get either front drive or all-wheel drive, but it'll be interesting to see how well it does. Because last year, they sold 300,000 Camrys. That's a big number.
It is a big number, and that number of hybrids really contributes to fuel economy. It's certainly they probably didn't announce final fuel economy numbers, but certainly those fuel economy numbers are going to be better than a conventionally powered version of the Camry, certainly better than a V6 powered version
right.
that came before. And it strikes me it's in a lot of ways following in the path of what Honda has done with Accord or what Honda did with Accord this model year. And we're going to be talking about that, I think, later in the show.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's the thing. They're looking at these numbers, and they know that they're going to have to go hybrid to hit the combined fuel economy numbers that they have to hit. And that drives more cost into cars. So it'll be really interesting to see if they can sustain that sort of sales momentum if they don't have an entry-level gas-only car that costs maybe a couple of thousand less.
Yeah, and that's what Honda has done. They have retained an entry-level gas-only conventionally powered vehicle, which makes some sense to do. But if you have to meet these fuel economy requirements, I mean, maybe you just are forced to go all hybrid because you wouldn't be able to do it if you had that kind of volume with a conventionally powered vehicle.
Right, right. And the other thing is the fact that they are also offering all-wheel drive, which typically gives you a little bit of a hit in fuel economy. That's probably another reason why they want to go hybrid with these vehicles because, you know, more and more people, especially with their SUVs and now with sedans, they want that all-weather capability of all-wheel drive. And the only way to deliver that with decent fuel economy is to go hybrid.
Right. And I think we predicted on America on the Road several years ago that hybrid would be almost standard equipment on a lot of vehicles going forward. It just made sense to hybridize. That's a great way to get fuel economy. And now that prediction seems to be coming true a little bit, doesn't it?
Right, right. The one interesting vehicle that they don't have is there's not a plug-in hybrid version of the Camry yet. Now, they do offer that in the Prius Prime. So it'll be interesting to see if they go the plug-in route. Bigger battery, more cost. So, it's a wait-and-see thing.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. I just don't think they're going to have that at launch, and they might as well concentrate on what they're doing at launch and be single-minded about that hybrid for the 2025 model year. I think that's pretty cool, and I look forward to seeing that. You also saw another vehicle that Toyota has introduced. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, they have a flagship sedan that replaced the Avalon called the Crown. And when I first drove it, I thought, man, this thing sits kind of high off the ground. It looks like it's a SUV wearing a sedan hat. Well, sure enough, they showed a two-row SUV called the Crown Signia. It'll be all-wheel drive and hybrid only, and it's essentially going to replace the Venza in the Toyota lineup. So it's a nice-looking vehicle, and I think it'll do well for them.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I have come to like the Venza, so I'm going to bid that a fond farewell after scoffing at Venza in years past. But there you go. Well, let's talk about General Motors and Cruise and this whole self-driving thing. I mean, I think GM has found that this isn't nearly as easy as maybe some people were suggesting it to be. And they've run into a lot of trouble here in the state of California with what's gone on, been suspended from operation. I mean, the California Department of Transportation has said some pretty ugly things about what Cruise is doing. What's your take on all of this?
You know, you hit one pedestrian and you're a bad guy.
Right.
I just shows how immature that the technology is and what a long way, it has to go. And that was the problem. It wasn't recognizing like children, some pedestrians, things like that. It's very dangerous. So
yeah,
it's just not ready for prime time. And I think it just shows that, the liability is so great that they're kind of winding Cruise down now. So it'll be interesting to see what their take is on autonomous driving moving forward.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're going to crank it up again, though, because they've invested so much in this technology. And there's reports that they lost $700 million on this just last year. Mary Barra, who is GM CEO, at one point predicted that Cruise could generate $50 billion in revenue for General Motors by 2030. I mean, they were staking a whole lot of money and effort, putting a lot of chips in the middle of the table on this thing to just go, well, we're not going to do that. I don't know that they can do that. They can decide, well, we're just going to back out of this thing.
Well, you're talking about a company that walked away from plug-in hybrids, so there you go.
Yeah. True enough, and plug-in hybrids might be the thing going forward, right? So, crazy stuff. Well, let's talk a little bit about electric cars. You're an electric car driver. They are driven a lot less than other cars in terms of just miles driven. Is that your experience with your Nissan Leaf?
Yeah, I think so. You know, range is a limitation. You know, mine only has 150-mile range. So they're great for running around towns, but you're not going to do any big, long road trips. So I think you're going to see a lot of EVs racking up. Maybe, you know, they say that the average car goes about 12,000 miles a year or 12 to 15,000. I think you'll see considerably less on most EVs because they'll just use it for a run-around town car and not a long drive.
Right. This was a study by George Washington University, and they found that the average EV goes about 4,500 miles fewer, less miles than that 11,000-12,000 that the typical conventional vehicle does. So about what you're talking about. And, you know, it kind of makes sense, as we have talked about here on the show. EVs are often used as a second car or a primary car with a gasoline car as the backup. And that's not taking us to 100% EV, is it?
No. But that's the landscape. That's what we're going to end up with, I think. So.
Yeah, well, that's the landscape. That's what the consumer wants the landscape to be. That is not necessarily the landscape that government regulators want us to have. Right. Well, when we come back, we're going to be starting our discussion of the various finalists in the North American Car of the Year, Truck of the Year, and Utility Vehicle of the Year competition. So stay with us for that. With Matt DiLorenzo, this is Jack Nered with you, and we're so glad you're with us. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back.
America on the Road on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Jack Nered.
Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Matt DiLorenzo. This is Jack Nered with you on our special on the North American Car of the Year, Truck of the Year, and Utility of the Year finalists. Matt, of course, is the author of a great book on electric vehicles called...
How to Buy an Affordable Electric Car, A Tightwad's Guide to EV Ownership. And
yes.
You can find it on my website, TightwadGarage.com.
Tightwad Garage is perfectly named for Matt DiLorenzo. Always great to have him on the show. Utility of the Year. A lot of great contenders in this category. We kicked this around about 2 weeks ago, and there were close to, well, I guess at least 10 vehicles that we considered. This is, of course, Utility of the Year is a very important category now because most people are buying crossovers as opposed to sedans. It's maybe even more important than Car of the Year. Let me announce the three finalists, and then we can kick them around a little bit and talk about them. They are, in alphabetical order, the Genesis Electrified GV70, the Kia EV9, and the Volvo EX30. These all have something in common, don't they, Matt?
They're all electrics.
Yes, they are. They're all electrics. Although the volume in the utility side is not electric, right? And we had some pretty interesting contenders, I think, from the conventional side. But let's talk about these vehicles first, and then we maybe can get into that.
Right.
Genesis Electrified GV70. What's your overall take on that vehicle?
It's a terrific vehicle. I mean, I think the GV70 is a great luxury SUV on its own with a gas engine. They just electrified it, and they did something similar last year with their G80 sedan, and they really have it down. I mean, the power, it's quiet, it's everything you expect an electric car to be, and a beautiful interior. So I give them a lot of credit. It's really a worthy competitor there.
Yeah, I think it's worthy, too. And you point out that, you know, very much like their non-electrified GV70, right? It's the same platform. And there's two approaches to EVs now, right? I mean, there's kind of this dedicated roller skate platform, and you build a bunch of different things on them. General Motors is doing that, for example. Kia is largely doing that as well, and we could talk about that with EV9. But there's something to be said, I think, for using an existing platform. I mean, what's your take, one versus the other?
Well, it's a build quality issue, and I think the fact that they've been building these things already for a couple of years, you're going to get a vehicle that's really well finished. And the quietness and the power that an electric powertrain brings just enhances the overall experience.
Yeah, I certainly found that. Kia EV9 is an important vehicle because it is one of the first three rows, maybe certainly the most affordable of the three-row electric crossovers. Mm-hmm. Probably more to come. It strikes me that that's a logical thing to see. Really expressive styling, right? Distinctive styling in EV9. Tell us your thoughts on this vehicle.
Well, that gets to your earlier point about it looking different than other SUVs out there. I mean, this was designed as an electric vehicle. They are able to optimize, I think, the interior a little bit better. So for the footprint of a three-row SUV, it really has exceptional interior room. It's fun to drive. It's very quick. It's very heavy. And but it does have that third row that a lot of people seem to favor. I think that and not that everybody uses a third row all the time. They just want it just in case. And it actually has a third row that's big enough for an adult. And part of that is, again, the footprint and the way that the EV structure has worked out for them.
Yeah, I think you're right. To me, it disappoints a little bit as a three-row because of its size. It really isn't all that big. They've gone taller.
Right.
And thus, they're able to put in a third row of seats, two seats. So it's a six-passenger vehicle, basically, as opposed to a five-passenger sedan you would have with three rows, mm-hmm. or with two rows, rather. As a guy who has driven a big-time Chevy Tahoe three-row for a long time, this is not a replacement for that or even close, really. I mean,
no.
this is more like...
It's a midsize.
Yeah,
it's not
at best, it's a midsize. I would characterize it being more like a compact with a third row, and a fairly decent third row. It strikes me it could well win this competition because a lot of people like it, and there's a lot of things to like about it. But at the same time, I think your typical three-row SUV buyer might not find it totally satisfactory.
Well, when you look at the volume of the full-size SUV segment, I agree with you totally. Mid-size segment, There's none out there. I mean, in this price range, the only other one that comes close is the Rivian, and that's a really expensive vehicle.
Right. We will probably see more, I think, going mm-hmm. going forward. Then there is the Volvo EX30. They're small and very affordable, at least in terms of base price, battery electric vehicle. You and I both had a chance to drive that overseas fairly recently, so we experienced it very up close and personal. What's your take on that vehicle?
I think it's a pretty exciting vehicle. The fact that the sticker price is around $36,000 and it offers a range of 275 miles in rear drive single motor. It gets pricey if you go all-wheel drive twin motor. That adds about $6,000 to the sticker price. So you're over $40,000.
Right. It also subtracts range pretty significantly.
Yeah, about 10 miles.
Yeah, and then, well, I guess that's not so significant. It seems like more significant in other vehicles, like, for example, the EV9, probably a bigger subtraction when you go to a faster kind of vehicle. Yeah.
But that's the thing. You get that twin motor thing and it tempts you to, you know, use the accelerator more. And that actually will probably hurt your overall range in the real world than it would on the EPA rating. The other thing about that vehicle, beyond the low sticker price, is the fact that it's a subcompact SUV, which is a growing segment, and it's affordable. But there's a couple things I don't like about it. And one of it is that to keep the cost down, there are no or very few manual controls. Everything is, including the outside rear view mirrors, are run through this center tablet touchscreen. And by the way, there's no traditional speedometer or anything in front of you as the driver. So some of that stuff is a little off-putting for me.
Yeah, I mean, they've gone kind of full Tesla on this thing in a lot of ways. And certainly that's a way to save costs. You don't have those discrete controls. You don't have to put them in. I think their argument is they have memory on a lot of this stuff, so you set it and forget it. And if you have two drivers, you switch between drivers, and that takes care of things like mirror setting. But I have a tendency, I don't know whether I get taller or shorter, depending on the day. I adjust mirrors all the time.
Exactly.
And the ability to do that is important. I think also the ability to see the speed you're going kind of right in front of you doesn't hurt. And you have to look over to the right to even see the speed at which you're traveling in the EX30. But I think a startlingly low price.
And, to your point, anytime you're digging through menus to find a control, you're a distracted driver. So, like I said, that's probably my biggest nit to pick on the EX30.
Right. Well, there are some vehicles. We talked about vehicles that didn't make the cut. I think one important one is from Toyota, the Grand Highlander, a more sizable three-row vehicle. Finally, a really genuine three-row vehicle in a Highlander. What do you think about that vehicle?
I thought it was really nice. I enjoyed driving it. The other, the fit and finishing is excellent. Very upscale looking interior, and that's a very popular vehicle. So,
right. Another vehicle I think we both liked is the new Honda Pilot, the new version of the Honda Pilot, kind of the same in the same general area there, three row, midsize,
right,
larger than typical.
It's
mid-size.
Kind of a benchmark of the segment, really, and I like the drivability of the Pilot, especially. The fit and finish and everything. So I thought if there was going to be a non-EV finalist in the utility category, it would have been either the Grand Highlander or the Pilot, but not the case.
And then there's one more vehicle I think both you and I like a lot, and that's the Hyundai Kona that's available in a bunch of different flavors. So that could have been included too, but it didn't make the cut. So well, when we come back, we'll be talking about the Truck of the Year nominees, and we've got some pretty good ones there, so we'll talk about that when we come back. With Matt DiLorenzo, this is Jack Niereden. Stay with us. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road.
This is America on the Road on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Jack Niereden.
Welcome back to America on the Road with Matt DiLorenzo. Jack Niereden back with you. And this is our special North American Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year finalist program, where we kind of count down, reveal to you the finalists, and then talk about them a bit. Maybe at some point we'll predict which one will win, but maybe we won't. We'll see as we go through this. Truck of the Year, a little more limited field among trucks. There just aren't that many new trucks every year, but fairly robust crop. And I will again name them in alphabetical order. Finalists are the Chevrolet Colorado, the Chevrolet Silverado EV, and the Ford Super Duty. So let's take these in the order in which I've just mentioned them. I guess the most mainstream of these by far is the Chevrolet Colorado midsize truck. Your thoughts?
I think they did a nice job with it. My big problem with it is that these midsize trucks are almost the size of a two-generation ago full-size pickup. You know, I would like something a little bit more compact, but maybe it opens up the market for them to bring out an even smaller truck. But It's well done. Unfortunately for our drive, I only got into the ZR2, which is this monster off-road, you know, like I needed a ladder to climb into it, and it had a spare tire in the bed. I couldn't see out the back window. But I give them credit. It's going to be a competitive truck. There's a brand new Tacoma out there. Ford has been doing really well with the Ranger. I think they're going to do, I think it fits the bill. And I think it's a great alternative for people who are finding that the full-size trucks are just too big for them now. And they can actually garage this thing and get some decent towing and fuel economy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely on that. I think the full-size trucks have kind of gotten so big that a lot of people just, they're more than they can handle. When I have one here to test at my home, you know, it basically dominates the entire block. It's just the, the way it is. They're so massive. And you know, the Ford Super Duty we can talk about is right in that ballpark, if not more so. But I think this is a real sweet spot now, and I think these vehicles look more like full-size trucks, and I think looks are a very important aspect of the truck market, you know, just styling, you know, portraying yourself as a driver of a truck, and you don't want to be in the little bitty truck. You want to be in the manly truck, and I think the Colorado really captures that in a bunch of different flavors.
Yeah, I think the styling is really is good because I think trucks are meant to be rugged, you know, kind of, and it just kind of off the track. You wonder how the Cybertruck, which doesn't look like a pickup, is going to do. But I think the Colorado styling pretty much hits the nail right on the head.
Yeah, and a lot to like about its conventional powertrains available in a bunch of different rear drive and four-wheel drive. You can get off-road versions. You can get work truck versions. Going to do a lot of volume. It's aided by the fact that Ford Motor Company pulled the newest Ranger out of the competition. Its head-to-head competitor, we'll probably see that in the competition next year. But we'll see what happens with that. And, of course, maybe a little side note, a little kudo to the GMC Canyon, kind of the sister ship. I think both you and I liked the Denali version of that when we drove it in Ann Arbor about a month ago.
Yeah, and it's a more luxury, you know, oriented pickup. And you look at the use patterns, that's become a very important part of these vehicles are the upscale trims.
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, let's talk about Silverado EV. I mean, very much anticipated version of version. Maybe it's a completely different truck. I think Silverado is in name only kind of thing on this. But a full-size battery electric truck from Chevrolet to go head-to-head with the Ford F-150 Lightning pickup truck. How do they compare, do you think?
Well, the problem is that we drove the work truck version, and the more consumer-oriented versions aren't going to be out for at least another year. So in my estimation, for the money, it's very expensive. It's got tremendous range. I think it's they're saying over 440 miles of range, which is spectacular, really, for an EV. But again, it's expensive. It's kind of bare bones because it is a work truck. Drives great. It looks cool because it's kind of a unit body as opposed to having a separate cargo bed like a traditional pickup. But, for me, if it's competing against the Lightning, I think the Lightning has more of a consumer models out there. And I still give it the edge because from the point of view, most people drive these things as their personal vehicle as opposed to using it for work. And the versions we drove weren't as luxury oriented as the Lightning are.
Yeah, well, certainly not as luxury oriented as an $80,000 truck would be or you would expect it to be, which is essentially the base price of the work truck as we drove it. Still, I think there's interesting things about it. We didn't get to see all the interesting things because we had the work truck version that didn't have the thing like the mid-gate that opens up the rear of the cab and allows you to, you know, slide stuff into the cab and all the way up to essentially the front firewall. That's a pretty interesting feature, isn't it?
Right. They, you know, last seen on the Avalanche.
Right.
You know, that was an interesting truck and the same type of, you know, unit body construction and the ability to have that mid-gate. I think we'll have to reserve judgment till we start seeing less expensive versions with things like the midgate in them. But even that the RST that they're going to come out with, the first versions are going to be really expensive. And it's going to be a couple of years before you start seeing more affordable Silverado EVs out there.
Yeah, the RST version, I think they announced a price of well over $100,000. I think, if memory serves, something like $105,000 as a base price. It's a very well-equipped truck, but at the same time, that's going to price many, many people out of the marketplace who want the utility of a crew cab pickup truck, a full-size crew cab pickup truck, but they're not willing to go six figures for the thing.
Exactly.
And again, this is a vehicle that uses Ultium roller skate, you know, the skateboard underneath, that's supporting a lot of different platforms, or will, I guess.
Yeah,
not
we'll
not
see.
Quite yet, right?
It's a slow rollout, let's put it that way.
Yeah, slower, I think, than General Motors wanted it to be. Well, let's talk about Ford Super Duty. I mean, I look at the Super Duties, especially on the personal use side, as tow vehicles. I mean, most of them are used for towing. They're great for that. Ford understands that, and it really equips them that way. I think they're terrific vehicles. Whether they are truck of the year, I'm not certain. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's kind of a tough call. I'm a big fan of the F-150s in general, and the F-250, the Super Duty, is a lot of that truck and more. It is big. I mean, there's no getting around it. It's just a huge truck, but it's got big mirrors on it. I think from a drivability point of view, it drives a lot smaller than it actually is. You know, when I went out on the drive in Ann Arbor, I felt perfectly comfortable, you know, especially when you're on the freeway around other 18-wheelers and stuff like that. The visibility is spectacular in that thing. And it's got great power. And so, you know, if you do trailer, do work, that kind of thing, it's a great kind of family vehicle for those purposes.
And I think they've done a good job of equipping it that way for personal use. I mean, you can get a work truck type version of
sure.
it, or a more bare bones version of that for commercial use. But certainly they trick these vehicles out. This can be a $100,000 truck as well.
Easily.
But I guess if you're towing a giant Airstream trailer, or you have a huge cabin cruiser or something you're going to tow, you probably got the bucks to have the $100,000 truck to tow it as well.
Right. And, you know, I think that's sort of the key to the success of that vehicle, is it's the right blend of comfort and capability. And give them a lot of credit. Whether it's going to be Truck of the Year, you know, we'll have to see what the other jurors think.
Yeah. I think actually you can even get off-road versions, you know, all-wheel drive versions of the Super Duty, which is another take. I'm not quite certain the use case for that, but I guess it's out there.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you have a favorite amongst these three now that you have heard what those three are?
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards the Colorado at this point. I respect the range and the capability of the Silverado, but I'm just not there yet with it. I just would like to see a less expensive, more consumer-oriented pickup in the EV range for them.
Yeah. Well, my guess is the Silverado EV will be Truck of the Year, but that's just a guess.
So we'll see. You go.
And when we come back, we'll be looking at Car of the Year finalists. So stay with us with Matt DiLorenzo. This is Jack Neared, and we'll be right back right here on America on the Road.
This is America on the Road on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Jack Neared.
Welcome back to America on the Road with Matt DiLorenzo. Jack Neared back with you for the final segment of our special on the North American Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year finalists. And in this segment, we're going to talk about the Car of the Year finalists. Obviously, one of the most prestigious awards in the industry, chosen by a jury of 50 prominent writers and reporters on vehicles. And here are the finalists in alphabetical order. The Honda Accord, the Hyundai Ioniq 6, and the Toyota Prius. So that's a kind of wide-ranging mm-hmm. trio there, Matt. Let's talk about Accord first. I think both you and I like the Accord. I certainly do. I think Honda is doing a lot right with it, including making the up-level versions hybrids and gaining all the drivability and fuel economy benefits from doing that. Kind of stealing a page from arch rival Toyota by doing that, but I think they get some kudos for that. What's your overall take on the Accord?
Well, I think the Accord has been a benchmark of mid-sized family cars for many, many, many years. And, you know, the thing is that you're not going to get anything revolutionary from Honda. They just keep making it better and better and better. So from a drivability point of view, I'm very impressed. The styling is getting better. I think they kind of went overboard on the touchscreen. They kind of dialed that back and put a couple of extra redundant controls in there because of, you know, people complaining about not wanting to deal with the touchscreen. So I think they've done a really great job in making a great car even better. So I think it's going to be a real tough competitor for car of the year. I think it's going to be at the top of a lot of people's lists.
Yeah. I think the only thing it might lack is flash, right? It seems utterly conventional, although having, hybrid across the top of the lineup is very definitely a difference for it and versus a lot of its competitors still. But I don't know that it has the wow factor that maybe a couple of others on this list have.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the styling is conservative. The buyers of that vehicle are typically conservative. They don't want that kind of flash. And beyond the hybrid portion of it, there's no EV version, there's no plug-in version. And I think that's that little extra from a technological point of view that a lot of people are kind of looking for trying to be a pace-setting vehicle.
Right. Let's talk about IONIQ 6. Frankly, I'm a little surprised that IONIQ 6 is on this list, not because it's not a good car, but because it is so similar, based on the same platform of vehicles we've had in the past, including our utility of the year, the Kia EV6, I think. EV6,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting. What's your take on that?
I have a real problem with the styling. it's polarizing, to be quite frank. You know, the back end falls away dramatically, and to get that dramatic look, it really compromises trunk space. And one of the reasons you buy an electric car is for things like a frunk, a rear trunk, a lot of interior room. I just don't get that feeling when I'm driving the IONIQ 6. There's nothing, the styling is radical. It doesn't offer much in the way of a driving experience that's different from the IONIQ 5. So I was quite, it wasn't one of my finalists, and I was quite surprised to see it actually make it as a finalist. But again, some people, they like that kind of flash, and it's an EV, so...
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, certainly EVs are getting extra points from a lot of folks on the jury, I think, strictly because they are EVs. To me, there's not all that much new here because of the same platform. Again, I like the styling, I think, a lot more than you do. I think the styling's, kind of cool in a way. But I just don't see this as, that big step forward, given the fact that we've seen this platform before.
Yeah, and I was a little disappointed in the interior, too. I mean... When you look at it's projecting to be sort of an upscale sort of vehicle, but the interior was a little stark and didn't really come across as being sort of a flagship sedan type of vehicle that when you look at it, you think, well, that's what this is supposed to be. Well, it isn't.
Right. Let's talk about the Prius. I mean, maybe the Prius was introduced a while ago now, and maybe to some of us in the industry, it seems a little bit like old news, but I think there's so much to like about the Prius and the Prius Prime. What's your take on that and the possibility of it being Car of the Year?
I think that the styling is terrific, you know, and that was one of the things that was kind of holding the Prius back from a sales point of view, because it looked odd and some people loved it and some people hated it. Well, everybody loves the styling of the Prius. It really is good looking. The fact that they also have a plug-in version that gets, you know, about 40 miles of pure electric, it makes it really a great gateway vehicle if you're considering an EV, but you only have one car or, you know, in your fleet, I would say get the Prius Prime. The downside on it is that the styling is so swoopy that getting into that back seat's a little bit of a challenge. But other than that, I give them a tremendous credit for taking a vehicle that was really not going anywhere in terms of sales or even attracting attention and turning it into a head turner.
Yeah. Well, and I would say, too, it drives really well. I mean, previous editions of the Prius were kind of snoozemobiles, right? I mean, they were fine, but there's no driving excitement whatsoever. The drivability of the Prius, it's not a sports sedan, but, boy, it's fun to drive. It's got some pep. I think the just adding electric power where you can smooths things out. The driving experience, I think, is quite good.
And from a fuel economy perspective, even just in the standard hybrid, not even the plug-in, you're getting over 50 miles per gallon, which is astounding. I mean, if you told me even 5 years ago that you could get a compact car that would go 50 miles on a gallon of gas, I wouldn't believe you. And here we are. I think they've done a terrific job. The interior is nice. It's a very upscale look to it. Again, they have, there's still a big touchscreen in it, but there's still enough redundant controls that you're not fishing around or distracted while you're driving. I give them a lot of credit.
What's your quick prediction on which one of these three will be North American Car of the Year?
I think it's going to be a tight race between the Prius and the Accord. That's my.
Well, my guess off the top is Toyota Prius. So we'll see whether I'm right, and we'll find out in very early January when maybe we'll do a show like this again. Well, Matt, tell us again about your book and your website.
I've written a book called How to Buy an Affordable Electric Car, A Tightwad's Guide to EV Ownership. And basically, it's a how-to. I mean, it's geared primarily to people who have no idea what it's like to own an EV. And I think there's a lot of people out there like that. I mean, they're very knowledgeable people. The people who buy EVs are very knowledgeable. But I think there's a lack of educational information out there for people who would, you know, I'd like to buy an electric someday. But, you know, this goes through the whole thing of what it's like to buy one, what range issues you got to keep in mind, home charging, public charging, maintenance. There are some maintenance issues that, you don't have oil changes, but there are other things to look after. So that was reason for writing the book. And you can find it on my website, tightwadgarage.com.
Yeah. Well, look for it. Great stuff. And as you say, buying an electric car brings with it a lot of responsibility and a lot of changes to your lifestyle. So be aware of that. While you're checking out books, you might want to check out Dance in the Dark, my crime thriller inspired by true crime. My latest book, probably a pretty good Christmas gift for a person who likes crime thrillers. And so look for that. If you like America on the Road, listen to it on this radio station each week. We appreciate that. We appreciate being on the Sports Map Radio Network and on all those great Sports Map Radio Network stations. And then there is a podcast as well. So if you like the show, pass the information about it on to others. The podcast version of America on the Road is available on all the major podcast outlets. So look for it there and look for it on the Sports Map Radio Network website, where you will find a radio formatted version, among other versions of the podcast. And join us again next time for another edition of America on the Road. We appreciate you being with us, and we'd love to talk to you again next time. So join us then. This is Jack Neared saying thanks so much for being with us on America on the Road.